Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Kevin and Tom and Joe know all there is to know, from masterpieces to deep fried tacos. And if the movie sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler, won't say it twice cause we already warned you.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 774. Iron Claw, I got nothing.
Fine.
White Claw.
Yeah, well, knowing this family.
They are pretty white.
Yeah.
So, what's left of them? So the first
spoilers.
This will be the first synopsis you've ever done where you shouldn't need notes.
I don't need anything.
Yeah. This is the first time you could do a synopsis without having seen the movie.
Oh, I could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Joe came in with his huge legal pad. I know.
He's been waiting for this day.
This must be what it feels like when we do musicals for you guys.
We like musicals, but we're not like it's not wrestling for us.
That's true. What is your wrestling?
The Monkees.
Yeah. Oh, right on. What's yours?
Hackers, maybe?
Interesting. Okay.
I love that movie.
That's fair. Okay.
Yeah, but you don't have like...
Yeah, but you're not like a hacker.
I don't have anything. I don't really have a thing. Games. I like video games.
Okay, that makes...
I don't
that's
get to
fair.
Retro games.
Yeah.
You know, like I started that, the podcast Circle of Wizards starring...
Well done. Well done.
Starring Matt F. Bosler. But I guess that's kind of... I don't have that much time to play them, but I do love retro, like NES.
But that's kind of like if you were to like get into the history of retro video games.
Oh my gosh. The gaming historian Norm he lives in Kansas City and he has a huge channel, over a million subscribers. He might be 2 million, I'm not sure, but he goes into the history. He's like a any history channel, like he'll go through and talk about all the creators and everything. If you're into
like
games,
is it Ben Mankiewicz? Is that his name? That's a guy on TCM, right?
He looks actually like him, but he's really good at those things. He'll go through the history of Nintendo and Mario Brothers and the creators and everything.
Sure.
And so yeah, that would be
okay.
Good. Yeah.
Good. Well, when we get to a video game movie, it's all you.
we have to watch The Wizard.
I saw that in theaters.
That Tetris movie.
Tetris movie is really good.
What was the one? What was the Adam Sandler one?
Oh, no, we don't
what
talk
was
pixels.
That? Yes.
No. That was bad.
That was real bad.
But it's such a waste because it was a fun concept.
Uh-huh.
And
big
such
time.
A waste. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a short film they shelved, like the Meet the Parents one.
Yeah.
There was a short film they erased all evidence of, but, you know, and then they like screwed the guy out of, like, didn't they changed it and cut him out of it, the guy that created it and did
yeah,
the short
film.
It was a big thing. But did you watch the Tetris, the Apple TV movie?
No, I have not.
Oh, it's so good.
Is that the one with...
It's so good, Taron Egerton.
Yeah, okay.
Watch it. Again, you don't have to. It's Moneyball. You don't have to watch.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with like, oh, I just love games. If you do, you'll find it fascinating and you'll be like, oh, there's the Game Boy. Like you'll point out little historical things.
That was me during this movie.
Yeah, but seriously, you guys, watch. What's it called? Is it just called? It's not called Tetris, is it?
I have no idea.
No,
it's from last year. I can't. God, I'm blanking on the name of it. It is so freaking good, though.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Well, before we dig into all that shameless plugs, don't forget we're available on Apple Podcast, Spotify, YouTube. Yes. You're not supposed to say Google Podcasts anymore.
Oh, really?
It doesn't exist. They got rid of it.
Man. We'll just promote YouTube. We gotta bump that up.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the and credit's good, as we all know, right? And?
And go here.
And YouTube. You know, and starring.
The Apple movie is just called Tetris.
Oh, there we go.
Okay, so, I couldn't remember, but yeah. It's good.
But
and Norm, the gaming historian,
yeah.
I think did the video essay that inspired someone to write that script.
Really?
Oh, really?
Because I haven't heard of any controversy or anything, but Norm did a great video that I think got a million or two views too, and it's all about how dramatic the whole thing was, and having to like sneak into the Soviet Union and stuff, and like, you know, it was a game created there by someone in their free time, and they tried to take ownership and sell the rights to different people. It's really good. But Norm did this whole video essay on it, and then all of a sudden, a couple years later, like, we're making a movie. And I'm like, and I kept posting places like, you should watch this video because it's really good. So, you know, it's just, I didn't even think those two things were organically kind of tied together. Yeah.
So, wherever you find us, be sure and follow us. You never miss an episode. Maybe leave us a review. It's super helpful. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/RealSpoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. It's called the League of Show Shares. We're hoping you will share an episode. And people who were kind enough to share an episode last week include Librarian Cynthia, Glenn Cougar, Mellon Brewer, Tammy Lynn Powers Betts, Jason McLean, Travis Tewitt, Gabriel Lugo, Richard Kratzer, Tom Dowdy, Chris Falls, Ralph Tribble, Chris Magic Man, Phil Timon, Dissect That Film, Heather Sachs, David Rojas, Krypton Orphan 38.
Oh, well. All right.
What?
I mean, I don't know where the 38 comes. Maybe it was just like, oh, I need a number.
Maybe they were born in 1938.
That's true. That's true.
Is that the year Superman came out?
Is that 38?
Then the Action Comics number one, 1938?
June of 1938. Yes, that's right.
I shouldn't have to tell you. I shouldn't have to tell you these things.
No, don't you have that tattooed somewhere on your body?
Wendy Thompson, Colby Mack, Binge Movies, Geek to Me Radio, Ronnie Castle, Feelin' Film, In Session Film, Mike and Oscar, Matt Niglia, and Ryan Terry. So thank you very much for sharing the episode. We greatly appreciate it. Also, don't forget we have a Patreon, patreon.com/RealSpoilers, where for $5 a month, you get all sorts of bonus content, and we like you extra. So there's all that. Let's dig in, shall we?
Oh, man.
Ding, ding.
Yeah, it's going to go throughout the entire thing.
The whole episode can just be the bell noise.
Before we get started, I do want to say that if you go over to Binge Movies to their Patreon, Jason and I did like a four-hour... it's going to be like a four-episode thing of something that a lot of what has to do with this movie is the
Dark Side of the Ring,
which is a great series, and that will be it'll get brought up today.
Yeah,
basically about how the territories back in the 70s, that's how wrestling was. There wasn't like a big corporation; it was broken up into little
regional.
It was
they
regional.
Were regional things that had found various levels of success,
and depending on what kind of TV they had. Broadcast throughout the country.
Right.
And then like the consolidation of the territories into one big thing, which is kind of where we are now.
But
you gotta know the territories.
I just got you to quote a musical and you don't even know it.
I don't know it. What is that?
The Music Man.
Oh, okay. So like the consolidation of the wrestling territories and how that became one basically monopoly, and then how that correlates to where we are in movies right now, where it's like three studios at this point, where it used to be hundreds, maybe not hundreds, but a lot, and now it's
greater than three.
Yes, correct. So I think actually it's on his page. It's on the Binge Movies Patreon, but I'm pretty sure it's free. It's a free. It's posted there, but it's a free show
to get people to check out the Patreon.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah. So yeah, okay. I think this is one of my favorite. Not because it's wrestling. It does have a lot to do with it. But I think this movie is
not because it's wrestling.
Correct. Yes. This movie is this is incredible. Like,
it's a really
good
movie. This is Sean Durkin, the director, writer-director, who directed
did that Elizabeth
Mary Martha May Marlene.
Yeah.
Yeah. And The Nest with Jude Law and Carrie Coon. I interviewed him a couple years ago.
Did you see that? How was The Nest?
It was good. It's a slow
I like
burn.
Carrie Coon a lot.
Yeah, it's a slow burn, just very haunted. It's about a relationship that's going bad and just the implications of that, and
I will say with this movie, it is hard for me because I know this story. Like, this is probably one of the more infamous stories in professional wrestling.
I had no idea about this story.
Do you remember Kerry Von Erich?
No, because I grew up with wrestling, but because of my age, I watched it more in the early 90s. So I don't think Texas Tornado was, I think he came in in like 89, 90. Yeah, it would have been, yeah, so
there.
I had just missed him, and watching the older stuff, see, because they didn't call him Kerry Von Erich.
Which
I didn't realize the Texas Tornado, was it because Vince didn't want to promote the other
So the show? Thing with Vince McMahon is he...
Junior.
Whatever.
Well, but I'm just saying.
It's not. He's not Junior, though.
Well, but that's what he's, goes his, by. It's a different
no,
middle initial,
he
right?
does not.
What?
The old guard, Andre the Giant, Gorilla Monsoon, they called him Junior.
Okay.
Nobody else.
I gotcha.
Yeah. but he's
his
son.
Dad's name was Vince McMahon.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Yeah.
He's Vincent Kennedy McMahon. Yeah, McMahon is
not
the one,
E.
The Vince... one. The one that we Vincent J.
Yeah.
Vince... is his dad.
Oh, J. I thought it was E for some reason. Okay. You're thinking of Stimson J. Cat.
That's exactly who I was thinking of. Yeah. when he would bring people into the WWF, WWE now. If they came from a different promotion, he would basically change their entire, whatever their gimmick was, and a gimmick, oh boy.
Which sucks, because it's like people loved the Von Erichs.
Correct.
So it sucks that he did that.
This film touches on it, but you don't know, like, it's hard to understand just how popular these boys were.
Yeah.
David, Kerry, and Kevin, who are the three main characters of this movie, I mean, like, were legitimate rock stars.
I had no idea when I went back and watched the Vice thing. And,
oh,
and
yeah.
All these
Did you
things.
Watch it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I watched several of these different specials, and oh my gosh, these guys were bigger than movie stars.
They shut down to Six Flags. Like, they were out there to do a signing or something, and like, the police could not get the crowd under control. They had to shut down Six Flags.
Well, in the movie, when you see the funeral
I'm not a fan of wrestling, but... anything that shuts down a Six Flags
that is okay in my book.
You've got callbacks right there, buddy.
Yeah, go listen to episode 226. But in the movie, when we end up seeing the funeral, and you're looking at it from overhead, and I was like, okay, that crowd is a little like...
It's not.
I mean, you look at it, and the crowd, it's like the queen is walking, is going down the street. You know what I mean? It's like that kind of crowd. And then I watched the video.
The real
one. Holy crap, that people... cared about these. Those were superheroes. They were American heroes.
They were, you know, the people in Texas grew up with these boys, because Fritz was okay. So they don't tell you at all about Fritz.
Yeah. Probably for the better.
He was a scumbag, is really the best way. He was insanely hard on those kids. He sold pictures. Like, he was trying to sell pictures of David in this casket to people.
Oh, jeez. Like,
yeah. But he also, his wrestling persona is he was a straight up Nazi.
Yeah. Well, like, his early one, that's the thing, is like, I'm glad they don't touch on that, because they don't really need to touch on that part of
they
it.
They don't.
Because he ends up changing it eventually.
No, he retires. But he was thinking of, like, what's the worst?
Yeah. Like, if you're going to play
a villain.
Then, you know, especially that close to World War II.
Yeah.
I don't think it necessarily had quite the same political connotation.
Well,
I mean,
because he was
obviously
popular, so.
Nazis were bad, but he was playing on the fact that Nazis were bad.
Correct.
It was a character, to be clear. He is not a Nazi.
Yeah.
He was trying to become the biggest villain in wrestling. And so
That's why his finisher was called the Iron Claw instead of the Iron Cross. But he did have an Iron Cross as, like, his ring entrance. Like, he had a big, like, draping cape that had a giant Iron Cross on it. And he, being Fritz, played by Holt, oh man, I can never see this guy.
McElhinney?
Either he was on that Mindhunter, he was
like the older cop on Mindhunter.
Yes.
Casting, I mean, his performance is incredible.
It's eerie.
It's uncanny. When you watch the videos of the real Fritz and then thinking back to this performance, holy crap.
I mean, he must have, like, I was listening to Binge Movies, actually, and he's like, he must have sat down with Kevin and said, this is what I'm trying. Like, can you give me some, you know, some thoughts of, and Kevin, played by Zac Efron, this is basically a biopic, I guess, like, for him. Like, the brothers are around him,
but he's definitely the star of the movie.
He's also the only one that's alive. Spoilers. Right. He's the only one left,
which I think is why they wrapped it around him, because in the end, you know, he has an ending. Like, he is still around today and everything, but the other two were more popular.
David and Kerry, but it's tough.
Not that he wasn't popular, but they, I mean, that's why
Kerry's the one. Like, David, so the way it kind of works in the pecking order, and we kind of see this in the movie, is Kevin is Technically.
Dad literally lays it out as to which one is better.
And that's like, it is this eerie kind of like, I laugh during that scene, but at the same time, it's kind of like, it's darkly
funny.
That's
the kind of person he was, but in it, he wasn't even joking.
No.
And Kevin said in interviews like that, he really did have an order of favorites.
Oh, for sure.
That was, I mean, the way that, I have to say, after watching the specials, the way this film portrays this family is very accurate.
Pretty spot
There's
on.
There's things to make it fit into.
I mean, honestly, it sounds like, if anything, they toned it down.
They did.
Yeah.
There's an, here's the one thing they leave out. There's another brother that they don't talk about because he also died. Chris, who is Mike and Chris kind of get morphed together in this movie.
It's called an amalgamation.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Chris was the youngest of the brothers. He had asthma as a kid, so he had to take like this medicine that made his bones not brittle, but not as dense,
well,
I guess.
He didn't grow. He was only 5'5".
Yeah. Compared to the other boys.
Big,
yeah. So he, trying to live up to his family name, and he gets in the ring and he breaks his arm. And he ends up he shoots himself is what he does is, and the director, like, and Kevin finds him, like Kevin, finds a note from Chris, and it says, it's basically a suicide note. And he goes to Fritz and he was like, "Hey, have you ever seen him do this before?" And he's like, Fritz is like, "You better go find him." And as Kevin finds him, he hears the gunshot and he goes to like grab Chris. He puts his hand is. From Kevin's mouth, he puts his hand like under his head because he thought he took something, and his fingers, sorry, YouTube or whoever, like slip into the bullet hole.
Ugh.
And he, that's how.
So that's why, I mean, we're jumping way around.
This
the
is,
end
I'm
of
just
this,
saying, like,
but,
this is the one.
But that's why the
carry
death
thing,
at the end is
no,
a combination.
The carry thing, oh,
you're,
sort of.
You're
right.
Listening. I'm.
Kind
it's,
of.
It's an amalgamation because the dad finds him, not Kevin. So that's why that is the amalgam of
yeah.
Both
the way the
brothers.
Way Carrie dies is right. Carrie does, and it's awful. Like this family, and the director's like, I just couldn't put another one in there.
Yeah,
like, I couldn't.
Well, and it makes sense too. Like the Chris thing. I mean, as tragic as it is, and he was another one of these brothers. But there's already so many characters to follow.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so it would be really hard to put all five of them, and they all were five wrestlers.
Yep.
So it's like, I get
and it. And then to have him die, another one die. Yeah. And that honestly is what killed that promotion. It got to a point where the fans were just like, even the fans couldn't take it. Because it wasn't just the Von Erichs that died. There were other Bruiser Brody, who we see in the movie, and Gino Hernandez, who was the tag team that the brothers fight for when they finally debut together. Mm. Those are the two that they fight together. Both Bruiser Brody's murdered in Puerto Rico, and Gino Hernandez, nobody's really sure what happened to Gino. Mm. But, I mean, there can only be so many tragedies in a company where the fans just stopped coming. And that's what ended up killing that promotion, is it was just too much.
Yeah.
And then, so we do open up in this flick with, it looks like Fritz having his last match. Moira Tierney, who I think is also astounding in this as Helen, the matriarch.
I don't think it's Fritz's last match. I think it's he's starting to take off. He just got the car so he could travel around the territory.
Is that, I thought he was going to buy the territory. Oh, you're right.
No, they were showing that like he was just kind of this like mediocre wrestler. And he's like, if I'm going to really make some money, I got to start acting the part.
Right.
So he leases a Cadillac, sells his car, and then he's going to start touring as the bad guy villain and be big. And then I think that's going to transition into where we end up in modern day.
He
also shows that like he doesn't really care about his family. It's about wrestling.
Yeah.
And if wrestling supports his family, hey, great.
Right.
But like he's willing to like risk everything.
Yeah.
To just chase this dream.
And he wants to be the world champ. He wants that, and it doesn't matter how he gets it, he wants that belt.
And
the family.
And they don't show you. While he's traveling around the country and he's at a wrestling match, the oldest brother.
Oh, Jackie.
Jack Jr.
Yes.
Dies because he's out by the trailer and he somehow gets electrocuted.
So what he does is he touches the hitch and he gets electrocuted and he falls face first like into a puddle and dies.
And like drowns.
And drowns. Yeah. And Kevin is there. And Kevin, I think, was like 3 or 4. And I do like the line. Man, there's a line of the, we'll get there at the end of this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Holy
what a great way to end it. That was...
And, well, I'll get into it. Yeah.
And that's really something from those interviews he said. So, I mean, the fact that they used that. Like, they Durkin did his homework. Like, this thing is so...
Sort of.
What do you mean?
Sort of. There's stuff that...
Well, I don't think that he's wrong. I think he changed things for a narrative
for
film.
Narrative purposes.
I don't disagree about that.
But he did his homework. There's no way he got stuff wrong. He made a...
He had to make concessions.
This is based on a true story. Yes. I'll tell you at the front. That's any biopic. You know,
right.
No one's sitting there reading the history book and one-to-one, you know what I mean? And
well, they should. No,
if they were going to, this could have very easily been a series.
Yeah. I think this would have made a very interesting TV series.
You could
series.
Have stretched this out into six, seven episodes.
Yeah. So Jackie is technically the oldest Von Erich, but he does not...
He dies the youngest.
He dies the youngest, yeah. So Kevin is the oldest. And for the longest time, I always thought David was the oldest just because...
The way they pushed him.
Well, and also he was more popular. Yeah. Like he had there is something in wrestling that you just need to have that extra gear. And Kevin had the athleticism and he had the charisma in the ring, but he couldn't talk. And not that he couldn't, but when that
he was
scene,
not a good public speaker.
Correct.
Yeah.
And then when you see David, I mean that's pretty accurate. As David gets on the mic and he is just a natural,
which
and,
is so much what wrestling is, right?
Right.
I mean, obviously you have to be athletic. They're all pretty athletic, but it's the guys on the mic. It's The Rock. It's Stone Cold
Steve Austin.
Those are the people that motivate people. And, you know, Warrior and all the people back in the day too. But like, think about modern wrestling. It's like, it's all about how good you are on the mic.
It's storytelling.
It is. Right. You have to sell, you have to, you know, get the fans invested in you. Mm-hmm. And David had it. So Kevin is not floundering, but he has this match with Harley Race, who, if you're from St. Louis, he's based here. He was based here. He's not
so
now.
Much. So many Missouri references because of the because of
the NWA. The NWA. I mean, this was a hub of the NWA. St. Louis wrestling at the Chase. Like there's all of this different stuff that was St. Louis. You know, we're the center of the United States. I'm not.
And
just
was
saying
it at the Kiel?
They did wrestle at the Kiel, but. Wrestling at the Chase is the big thing.
It's like the at the Chase.
I know that. Okay. No, I'm saying, but didn't they do wrestling stuff at the Kiel?
The Kiel is the Chase. Oh, no, wait. I'm sorry. There was a different building.
The Kiel Auditorium.
The Kiel Auditorium, which then But
so there were, it was Kiel Auditorium, and there was also Kiel Opera House.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
So Kiel Opera House for local people today is Stiefel.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting to think that they did wrestling in there.
Yeah.
Which is just very...
They did it at the theater?
Wrestling at the Chase. Like, if you've ever been inside, which is a kind of a historic hotel here in town, they have, like, a banquet hall.
It's where Masters and Johnson lived.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But, like,
they lived
the way...
on the penthouse on the top floor, I believe, yeah.
Huh. But the way that banquet... It's hard to, like... I've been in that banquet hall. I'm just like, how did this work?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't make any sense how they would get this set up. So... Kevin has this match with Harley Race. And
we, on Review STL, we have an interview with the actor that played him.
To play who?
Harley Race.
Oh, do you really? Mm-hmm. That's fun.
Yeah, Kevin, I can't remember the actor.
He's pretty, like, that's pretty spot on.
He looks just like
him. He sounds like him, too.
Yeah, he did a really good job.
Harley Race is a very interesting fellow. Harley Race is, like, the epitome of the guy in the bar who just sits at the end of the bar and doesn't say anything, but will tear your face off.
Yeah.
He is kind of famous for... He could like bite a, either he could bite or he could use his hands and just like break and twist off beer bottles that aren't twist off.
Right. Before they were twist off.
Correct.
Offs,
he
make
like,
my teeth start hurting again. He was like a man.
Isn't it a bruiser.
Isn't it interesting to see the transition of what popular wrestlers looked like, and then maybe it's the Von Erichs, more the modern prototype.
A lot of what you see in wrestling today is because of the Von Erichs.
But then you think of like George the Animal Steel.
It's Hulk Hogan, obviously, was a body guy, but he was not built like Kerry Von Erich.
Yeah.
Like Kerry Von Erich.
Those guys are built like the way you see
today.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're
an Ultimate Warrior. And
yeah. Well, okay.
I'd say Warrior's more of a body than.
And where's Warrior from? Texas.
Oh, is he from Texas?
Yeah.
Okay. So he modeled
There's a line in this when Kerry comes home for Christmas.
Yeah.
And Fritz says, you know, when are you going to get your shot? It looks like your old tag team partner, Hellwig, seems to be getting a
shot.
Is
that him?
That's the Ultimate Warrior.
Jim
Hellwig was the Ultimate Warrior.
Okay.
And he was champion at that point.
So it's interesting. So Kerry went by the American Warrior?
So Kerry was the modern day Warrior.
The modern day Warrior. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Kerry Von Erich.
I can see where that character evolved.
And the Ultimate Warrior in WCCW, the World Class, was the Dingo Warrior.
Oh.
Yeah.
Dingo Warrior.
And his tag team partner was Sting.
Ah.
Like, they were the Blade Runners.
You have a shirt of that?
I do. I'm wearing it right now.
Oh, okay.
So Kerry gets this title, or Kevin gets this title shot, and the goal is that it's going to be a DQ. Kevin's going to win. It's predetermined, folks. We all know that. We're not going to pretend like it's not.
But we're not quite there yet, because we haven't even talked about to get the title shot yet. The first match he has is a not for the belt.
Yeah. And it doesn't, but that's the whole thing is like the goal is like they're going to get you two in the ring. Kevin is going to win by disqualification. Yeah. And then that will lead to, because that's kind of the way wrestling used to be, is you would, the NWA champion would go from territory to territory and kind of build up their stars. And then
it's crazy. And if they took off enough, they would give them
correct.
The belt. I find that so fascinating that it's not like
it was a very carnival-like experience.
Yeah. And it's not predetermined in the way like, okay, you're going to go on this 6-month tour and then end up with the belt at the end. They're like, if you're popular enough, you'll end up with the belt. I think that's such a fascinating way to see like, does this guy work or not? Because we're not going to give the belt to someone if they're popular.
And that's the whole thing is like the NWA, their champion would go to Texas. They'd go to St. Louis. They'd go to the Carolinas. They'd go, you know.
Apparently put on the same show at each stop because there was no TV, and you know, right at first.
Back then, yeah.
And so if you had somehow watched both shows, it'd be the same outcome, it'd be the same moves.
Shawn Michaels has told the story where he was wrestling. He was working a program, which means these two guys were working together. Razor Ramon or Scott Hall. They were working towns together, and they would have an A match, a B match, and a C match, and they knew it. They knew what they were going to do. And he's like, "What are we going to do?"
That's
tonight?
Good. They
like,
started
match,
switching them
we'll
up.
Go to so match A, or we'll go to match. Yeah, because by then you have TV, right. You have stuff like that.
And it sounds like the Von Erichs really were the ones that made. Like they said in the documentaries, like there was no one with cameras going into the ring and doing that. And they kind of started
the
show.
That world class revolutionized like things that we see today.
Yeah.
Came from world
class. Sounds like they invented modern.
Well, and there's a line in this where the youngest brother is like, was it Mike? Did you see like all the new camera angles?
Yeah.
And Fritz is completely dismissive.
Camera.
Like, oh, people don't come for the camera angles, and it's like the hell they don't.
Yeah, right.
Like,
especially when they're on ESPN.
It makes it more dynamic for the home viewer, which is ultimately like, yeah, that's they are there for the whether the average viewer knows that they're there for the camera angles or not,
right.
If they watch one with really good camera work and one with
garbage camera work,
yeah, like they're going to instantly like the better camera work. Mm-hmm. One better.
They used to essentially just set up a camera and point it at the ring, but that wasn't exciting.
No, I mean, and the WWE, the way wrestling looks now is based on the WWE. Like they have that. It's hard to describe to tell someone who doesn't watch wrestling that Vince McMahon, the way things are shot and the cameras are moved and the way things look, like he did all that. Like that's basically what it's looked like. If you were to watch an episode of Raw from 1997 and watch an episode of Raw from 2023, it's basically the same. It's better cameras. Like there's more lights
and
digital boards, but the angles and the way the camera moves, all that stuff is from him.
But it sounds like he took it from the Von Erichs.
Did. Yeah, right? The Von Erichs, there was no theme music back then. Like the Von Erichs and the Freebirds were the first ones to start using like popular songs.
That was cool the way they show Mike listening.
So did boxing take that from wrestling?
I think the pageantry I think has always been there with boxing,
yeah.
But I think that there's probably like a give and take between the two. As far as like using songs, it probably is like a symbiotic kind of thing because you know in
pretty
Rocky,
sure Apollo Creed invented,
but I mean Rocky coming out to High Hopes and you know things like that. But I mean, yeah, wrestlers just kind of like you know the ring announcer would say their name and they'd trot out to the ring and I'm pretty sure it was the Freebirds that started using like licensed music and it changed everything because then the crowd knew who was coming.
And right. Do you think they licensed it back then or just
hell no.
Like, there's no way to
no way. No, I mean Paul, they tell stories of Paul Heyman who ran ECW, like would, you know, he would use Alice in Chains or Pantera and never license the music. Like that's, you know, when you watch the stuff on the WWE Network now or the
Peacock, oh, they have Peacock, to take all the music out.
They have
of it.
To put in like garbage, like oh sorry. Yeah, like
royalty free.
Well, that might sound a little bit like Man in the Box, but it's not, you know.
When I used to work in radio, they would send us discs of royalty free music and it was all like named to where it was like you know,
knew what it was supposed to be.
You knew what it was supposed to be, you know. It was like the Dead Heat Chili Pipers. And it's like, and it would sound like, you know.
Oh my gosh, I'm going to listen to that's the really Dead Heat Chili Pipers.
It would sound like, you know, like the opening to like Suck My Kiss or something.
Yeah, right.
But not really.
Not really.
We need, we need the new intro to the show, I think, for 2024 is the Dead Heat Chili Pipers.
I will
Pipers.
Tell you, if you can go find it on YouTube, they're everywhere. If you listen to Chris Jericho's Diamond Dallas Page.
Thank you.
Diamond Dallas Page's like WCW theme. It smells like Teen Spirit.
Yeah.
But it's not. Like that's absolutely what it is, but it's not. Yeah, so he gets this match and the match goes okay. Like everybody's kind of on board with it.
They're all hyped up, but he gets on the mic and he can't say anything.
And so David jumps in the ring and starts cutting a promo. And when cutting a promo means like he's talking smack to Harley Race. And it's very accurate is that David just had it. Whatever that X factor is that you need to get over in front of fans, like it was just, he had it and everybody saw it. Even Kevin saw it and he was just like, Pakar! And that's how that happened is they
that was
strapped
the beginning of the end for Kevin's title.
Correct.
Push.
Sort of. Right. Because as the story goes on and they don't really get into it, but as Kevin becomes the only Von Erich left, like we got to put it on somebody,
right?
You know,
he's got the name,
correct?
Right,
and he's got the skills, but
for this time period, yes. I mean, that's stuff that, I mean, the movie doesn't even show him ever becoming the.
He has a match in. Actually, let me see. I wrote this down. He wrestles Flair at one point after Flair gets the belt.
Who doesn't? Right.
That's also true. Right? Like that dude.
He was the guy. He was the guy.
He was the man.
I wrestled him.
Yeah.
Same. He just,
that was just for fun. That was recreation.
It was funsies.
Yeah.
He
was staying at the Chase.
Yeah. He's like, hey, let's go. What are we doing? So he does wrestle Flair at one point before David, I think. And Kevin wins the belt, but they do what's called a dusty finish.
Dude, so that was messed up.
Which one?
The real, when he wins, but they take it away and disqualify him?
Right.
That was they don't show this in the movie, but in real life,
yes.
That was messed up.
It's called a Dusty Finn, and Dusty Rhodes is a famous wrestler. His son is now on the program
Gold
now, Cody.
Dust.
Yeah, no, well, that's his
well,
other
Dustin,
son.
Well,
Dustin.
The first, the one that was before
yes,
Cody
right.
was.
Yeah, Dustin, Gold Dust.
Gold Dust.
And he, what happens is you make the babyface go over, you make the crowd think that they've won this belt, or won the match, and then the refs say, oh, we missed this, and they give they reverse the decision.
I watched the real thing, and I'm like, how did they get it? Like, I didn't see anywhere. What did they say he was disqualified
for? So there
for?
Could have been, so one of the rules, I think, in one of the promotions was, like, you couldn't jump off the top rope.
Oh,
like,
that was his finish.
You couldn't throw someone over the top rope. It was all these different things that were pretty.
Which was weird, because earlier in the match, I believe Flair threw him out of the ring.
Okay, so, right, but he's a bad guy. And so Flair's
it,
breaking the rules.
But I'm just saying, if they're going to disqualify Kevin, Flair
well,
did
don't
it.
Put logic into it.
Okay, I'm just saying, I watched the match.
I'm here for that.
I was as frustrated as those people in the audience, because when Kevin won the belt, I mean, that pop.
Yes.
People were so ecstatic, because at this point in time, the Von Erichs were more popular than the world champ. Mm-hmm. They wanted him. Mm-hmm. And when they took it away, that whole audience is like, you know, I'm surprised there wasn't
well,
a
that's
riot.
The thing is, right? And now you've got the fans to come back when Kevin gets his rematch. I will say, Kevin wrestled Harley Race in 83, but David wrestled Harley Race in 77 and 81. Hmm. So, like, David was already wrestling. So they make, in this movie, they make it look like David jumps in the ring and all of a sudden, but when that match happens with Harley, David has already wrestled Harley Race twice at that point. And now they've strapped the rocket to David, and he was it. He was going to be the one to bring that title into the family. He was going to Japan. to do this tour. And basically they say, you got to get over in Japan to get over here, because the NWA at that time had a working relationship with Japan.
I had no idea that back then wrestling was so popular. I know today it's huge in Japan, but I had no idea back in the 70s, 80s that people blew up like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, big time. I mean, you can find, like, Hulk Hogan.
I want to see Hulk Hogan go, like, Japan.
Hulk Hogan wrestles the Great Muta, like, over in Japan, and he wrestles a completely different style. Because Japanese wrestling is completely different than it is here.
That's interesting.
It's weird to watch Hulk Hogan, who's, you know, very, like, body slam, punches in the face.
Actually doing athletics.
Doing, like, an enziguri, which is, like, kick to the back of the head. Wow. Or an arm bar or things. It's like, this, I don't like this at all. Like, can you go back to dropping legs? So while all of this is going on, Kerry, who is the middle brother, is about to go to the Olympics, and he is going to, he's a discus, like, shot put thrower. Mm-hmm. But Jimmy Carter pulls the United States out of the Olympics in 84. No. What year is
80.
It? 80.
Yeah.
In Russia.
Yeah. Because the Olympics are in Moscow.
The Olympics are in Moscow. Russia invades Afghanistan.
Right.
It's bad. And so he's like, we're not going to send our American athletes to the Soviet Union and pretend like everything's okay when they're invading Afghanistan.
When it's not.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is like just another bad luck. I mean, besides from the deaths, I mean, with Jack Jr. dying, like, this is really the first really bad tragedy that happens, because it's like this guy would have a whole different,
he's almost like Michael Corleone in The Godfather. Right.
You're gonna go be
a legit athlete, not a wrestling athlete, and bring that sort of stature to the family, and instead it gets taken from
him. Drags you back in.
Yeah,
right.
I want you to be a part of the family
and that's the other thing, is I think that they do a really good job of making Fritz in the beginning, right? I think he's very lovable, and he loves these boys, and he loves the business, and that's their world. And as the movie goes forward, he gets worse and worse and worse, which I do think is interesting, because in this scene, right? So Kerry, they realize that he's not, I do like the scene where Kerry's practicing, and then like the coaches come walking out, and people are just kind of like, what's going on? Yeah. And then you see like the reactions of people around them, where like a guy's throwing his hands up, or another guy collapses. And
this is, you know, Sean Durkin being an excellent director. I love that he shows and does not tell.
His
movies are full of that, where he does not hold your hand.
Yeah.
He presents enough evidence to figure it out, but I just love that his storytelling technique is watching these things play out without a character expository.
Like, there's archival footage of like Jimmy Carter saying, we're not going.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have to say anything.
But I just love that in another movie, someone could go, hey guys, they're stopping the Olympics.
right.
But in this movie, it sits there for a minute and everyone's like, what's going on?
Yeah.
As the audience, you go, what's going on?
You're like, what is happening here?
I just love that you get to take in the story like that, whereas someone else would just spoon feed it to
that's
you.
That's true.
I'm just saying, he's a really talented director, and that's just a small part, but you'll notice that throughout the film, is he lets you kind of live in the moment with the characters, see it through their eyes. There's some excellent performances. I mean, Zac Efron is phenomenal in this movie. He's a really good actor.
He is fantastic in this movie. I can't get over his face.
Well, he broke his jaw.
Is that what he did for real?
Well, he broke his jaw before when he was doing The Great Beer Run or something, because he's in interviews to promote that movie, and people said, oh, there's rumors you've done something to your face, and so he broke his jaw.
Okay.
And so it healed in a certain way, and then obviously put on a lot of muscle for this movie, and then I think you just fill out overall.
Yeah, but sure.
But he had a, you know, an injury.
It was a little distracting, because
he didn't look like Zac Efron.
He
honestly
didn't look like Zac Efron. The only issue I do have with that is he got himself into Kerry Von Erich shape and not Kevin.
That was one of my things that I had noticed watching that archival footage. I'm like, whoa, Kerry was that big.
Kerry was huge.
But going back to the thing, I think they centered this around Kevin, because he's going to be the one that's through. He lived the entire story.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can't have every actor dedicate themselves to.
No, that's true.
Gain, you know what I mean? So it's like, it's a tough thing, because Kevin looked like what Kerry looked like, but you can't have every actor putting on 60 pounds of muscle.
And
right?
Some people, you just can't do it. Like, their body just doesn't work.
I mean,
that
to find, oh, okay, talk about apparently finding an actor that looked and sounded like Ric Flair, very difficult.
Oh, God.
Yeah, my,
if you didn't watch wrestling, you still would know that's
my,
not.
My wife was just like, what was the Ric Flair thing?
Here's the thing.
That was someone who could not hide their accent, whatever accent they have. I don't know.
Here's the thing about Ric Flair is that character is very specific.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, you can do a Ric Flair, you know, like, mean, woo, you know, like all that. He's got a
cadence.
Yeah, the
woo he got down off camera.
Yeah.
You heard him. I know, but I'm just saying, he said woo. That's about the only thing that guy could do. It's bizarre.
That was the thing that almost took me out of the whole thing.
Yeah, the movie was great until then. Yeah. It's an excellent movie overall. That is the first time in the entire movie where you go, what the hell is that?
Yeah, that promo that he cuts, that they show, is like, man, you should just play the Flair, the real promo.
And I went back and watched, because I'm like, I gotta see. I watched the Flair Von Erich promos, like, with the different brothers and stuff, and each one, and I'm like, okay, yeah, that's what I remember Ric Flair, even when I watched WCW.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's the Ric Flair I know. Whatever he was doing in this movie
is real bad.
It's nothing like the way Ric Flair talked.
Did you ever see... Will Ferrell in what's the HBO show where Danny McBride plays like the pitcher?
Eastbound and Down.
Eastbound and Down, yeah.
There's a
car salesman.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what that reminded me of. But it was real bad.
Yeah, I just don't know what the hell that. I mean, for a movie that's so well casted and the performances are so good.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why that guy got to be Ric Flair. I just
don't
get it.
It wasn't. It,
did they hire him before he got on the mic? They're like, you got the
man.
Build.
That's
weird.
Yeah. So, Kerry gets pulled off the Olympic team. He goes home and he's with his brothers. And there's even a scene here where the Von Erich boys are playing football, and Mike is not the most athletic one, and he's into music and he's just into different stuff, and his dad is just busting his balls.
I really thought that he was going to end up being gay.
Oh, well, I gotta tell, we never got it. Mike never lived long enough to get around to that, but I don't think you're totally wrong. You know, he could have been. But could you imagine being in that family?
Yeah, that would
be holy crap,
awful. But I really thought that because he was more like musically inclined, and like he seemed the sensitive one of the family.
I think you're absolutely right.
Although I think the movie kind of plays Kevin is also sensitive, but savvy
also
enough,
kind of a dope,
savvy enough to shut up about it.
Yes,
right.
Yes, exactly. We should also say that we are introduced to Lily James, who when she comes on screen.
I didn't know she was in this movie till she showed up.
Yeah, but I think she's the epitome of a star. Like, you're immediately drawn to her. Like, she is.
We talked about her in Cinderella. She does have that thing, right?
Yeah.
She has that charm, that charisma, that natural talent to where you're just. She's mesmerizing in that way, right?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And she's so good because Kevin is kind of adult. He's kind of not adult, but he's just kind of clueless. So like when she's hitting on him, he has no idea that she's hitting on him. And she's like, you know, you're kind of supposed to do this. He's like, oh yeah, right.
Just to break in here, breaking news. Aaron Dean Eisenberg says, I'm sorry if you didn't like how I portrayed Ric Flair. I stand behind what I did.
Well,
he's got a lot of heat.
Well, bud, you did a bad job.
Anyone that has ever even watched an episode
of
wrestling.
That's the thing, I feel like Flair... As soon as you see even the Flair from the 80s, right? As soon as you see him, you're like, oh, I know who that guy is. Yeah. Like, that guy looks, you know, like the other problem is at the Draft House, they played a lot of Ric Flair promos.
So it was
like,
top of mind.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Even the promo that he cuts in the movie is in the promo thing.
He worked with Durkin on another film of his called Dead Ringers. So I guess he knew the guy and gave him the part. But it's just a shame because it is... like a smudge on this almost perfect film. Like it's the worst thing about the movie. And I mean, that may sound over dramatic, but it takes you out of it so much because it doesn't even matter. Like pretend Ric Flair didn't exist and these were all fictional characters and they made up a character. It's just bad.
It is bad.
Like, you know, it's not right, but it's also just a really bad promo. And like Ric Flair was good on the mic.
Right.
You know what I mean? It just, I don't know. It's a very strange thing.
It was very weird. So the thing that they don't really touch on is, so now Kerry's in the ring and Kerry is the,
we said David died.
Not yet.
Okay.
But we're going to get that's next.
Gotcha.
Kerry is the, like, and the word that you used before, amalgamation?
amalgamation.
He is a combination of...
you should know this. There was a comic book brand, Amalgam.
Amalgam, yeah.
Where they merged the Marvel and DC characters.
Super Soldier was my favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of David and Kevin. Like, he had the charisma, he had the body, he had the athletic ability, like, he had everything. So now he's in the ring. All the three brothers are fighting together. What they don't talk about is they have this feud with the Freebirds, it's Michael P.S. Hayes, who is still working in the industry today, Terry Gordy, who is the big guy, and I wish I could remember the third.
It wasn't Flair? Flair wasn't?
No.
Okay.
Well, Flair's involved in that, right? So Kerry is working with Ric Flair. They're having this, you know, the Freebirds were good guys, they were working together, it was this big thing. They're having this cage match between Kerry and Flair, and Kerry is gonna win, and Michael Hayes is like giving him a chair, he's like, hit him with the chair, giving him everything he can to like get, and Kerry will not do it because he's a good old Texas boy. He's playing by the rules, he's not gonna break them. And then the Michael P.S. Hayes slams the, because Kerry won't be a bad guy, Michael Hayes slams the cage door on Kerry's head, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And this starts a feud that will set World Class on fire for a long time. The feud between the Von Erichs and the Freebirds was a thing that, like, I mean, it jacked that promotion up to a billion, and they were off to the races from there. So that spun out David, and David was going to go on, and he was going to go to Japan. The real story is that they're sitting at a table, their kitchen table on the ranch. And Kevin was like looking at David and knew that David didn't look well. And he's like, "Hey man." So the scene takes place in a bathroom at the wedding.
Yeah. Kevin and Pam are getting married.
Yes. And David's in the bathroom throwing up. And I do like that even Kevin's just like, "Hey man, like it's early. Like,
yeah.
What the hell?" But you can see in the toilet it doesn't look right.
Yeah.
You're
like, "That's not Jack and Muscatoli."
That's so gross. I had that at my wedding. And he basically, Kevin says, he's like, "I don't think you should go. Like, this is a bad idea, but David has to go. Like, if he wants to get this belt, he's got to go."
And in real life, he talked to his dad, and the dad said, "You're going to make every appearance that you..."
Basically, you show up to everything you're booked for. Ugh, you never miss a booking.
So, I mean, man.
So, at the end of the day,
Fritz, yeah. Man, he was living vicariously through his children.
I mean, he's a stage mother.
He was big, but he never got to the levels that he wanted to be. He never got the belt. You know, and he says throughout the film, they kept stealing it from us. They never gave us our shot.
Right.
And so one after another, he has all these boys, and each one of them is going to go.
This is what I'm going to do if Brian ever gets a hit podcast.
Yeah. Yes. And then
us too.
Yeah. And it's like, one of these kids is going to bring the belt home, and then he just keeps pulling them in and pulling them in.
We had two kids that were going to do it.
And it's so sad, because at the end of the day, and why, you know, I think Zac Efron gives such a good performance in this, and he's the pain that you see through his eyes and feeling about, you know, the being passed up by his father and seeing all these kids falling into this trap and everything, and how Fritz would just make it about, like, he would spin it around and pretend like, "Oh, well, you know, you've had some bad fortune, but now you get to come and make the family proud and all this." But really what it is, it's like, this asshole is so selfish and is so proud of the name and what he built that it's like he's going to get this title one way or another. And it's sad because ultimately it's him. And I think Zac Efron eventually will allude to it by the end of the film. But throughout the whole thing, no one says it. No one really stands up to him. But jerk is responsible for the downfall of his entire family.
Yeah. And his own organization.
Yeah.
At the same time. Unfortunately, David does go to Japan. He dies in Japan in February of 1984. Now,
this is an interesting story.
It's one of two things, right? Mm-hmm. There's some people, the main thing is the working theory is that he had gastrointestinal.
That's the official theory.
That's the one that the Japanese coroner reported it as, is that he basically, his intestines burst, and that's what killed him. Like, that's why he was throwing up. Like, that's,
but why?
That's, there's two stories. The one is that they tell this to Bill Irwin, who was a former, the goon, if you Google that guy in the WWF, he was basically a hockey player. And that's, you know, says that, like, they were in Japan, and what, there you just kind of eat. And they think that he ate so much that he burst his, he already had this thing, and he ate so much that his stomach burst. And that's what killed him.
That seems unlikely.
Yeah. So the other theory,
Flair to this day.
Yeah. Says, and also
apparently he was doing, they say he was doing a lot of drugs to hide the pain and stuff. As,
that is
as
correct.
You see in this movie with the other brothers, it's like they,
well, the one brother,
they, yeah, you, they have no choice but to
work through it
because of this terrible father.
Right.
And so they basically are just like, well, I got to do it. And so apparently he was doing a lot of drugs to, you know, understandably so.
Correct.
To get through this stuff.
And they, the story that is unproven is that Bruiser Brody goes to David's room, finds David dead, and then he starts flushing drugs down the toilet to get rid of it. So there's no evidence of drugs. I think the story's somewhere probably in the middle. I do think that he had this thing. I mean, like Ivy,
and then the drugs exacerbated it.
Yeah. Both. Yeah. I think it all ties in together.
I saw Ric Flair do an interview from a year ago, and he's just like, yeah, no one really knew he was on all these drugs. Like, he just, to this day,
also,
he's like,
here's the thing about wrestlers. 98% of them are lying. That's the truth.
Yeah.
Like, that's, I mean, they're going to tell a story. If the fish they caught was like this, it's going to be like this. The guy that's the worst is Hulk Hogan.
Sure.
Like, that's the...
Well, also, too, I think after so many years, you just start believing your own stories,
yeah, true.
Right?
That's,
like,
very true.
Like, I mean, at first, you know, you're a wrestler, and you're selling it, and you're doing all this stuff, and you live this persona, and then 10 years later, do you really remember
right.
the original? I mean, it's like that selective.
Memory is very malleable. We like to think that it's not, but... It is.
It is. Yeah, very much so. They speed up the timeline a little bit. David dies. They have the funeral in Texas, and it is, like you said, it is massive. It's a massive. He was the Yellow Rose of Texas was kind of what David was known by.
So they show an overhead shot in this film, and like I mentioned earlier, it looks like the Queen or King's coronation. You know, it just, the streets are lined with people on either side.
Yep.
And that's where I thought, oh wow. I mean, that, I mean it was popular, I'm sure, but goodness. And then you watch the video and there's like people on the street lined outside of the church. They had to put a video screen outside the church to show it so people could watch the funeral, and there's people just wrapped all along.
It's crazy.
It's
I mean, you'll never a wrestler, okay, and not to pick on any current wrestlers, but there will never be one as popular as those boys. When the time comes that the old guard does start to pass away, the Flairs, the Hogans, like those guys, you'll never see that again.
It's hard to say because
you're not going to fill a stadium.
It's hard to say though, because now wrestling reaches such a worldwide audience. I mean, I feel like culture was just different. You know,
there was
less to do, and people, like, wrestling was more of a popular thing for the common. It wasn't just like wrestling fans, it's like people, just general people, enjoyed wrestling.
Yeah,
where now it's like wrestling fans watch wrestling and no one else, you
well,
know, people
everything don't. It's the nicheification of America, right?
Exactly.
Everything, you know, which, I mean, podcasts, right? Like,
we
you know,
thanks, COVID.
Yeah, but I mean,
we
podcasts play into that, right? Like, look how many podcasts that would never work as radio shows because there aren't enough fans of that one particular topic in each individual city.
Sure.
But collectively across America, there are. And so, I mean, you know, the Clip Out is a fine example. Like, that would never work as a radio show. There aren't enough people in any one market that care about Peloton, but nationwide, you can hobble together enough to justify its existence.
And you did. But the people that mourned Bray Wyatt recently, like, that's a huge loss. And there are people outpouring. I mean, he was way too young to die.
Oh, yeah.
Was super popular and over.
And it wasn't anything weird. Like, he had COVID and then he had a heart thing and that killed him.
But, I mean, worldwide, the outpouring of love and support for him, I mean, is...
That's true. I guess that's fair.
I'll say this. I've never heard of that dude.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
that's my point.
But I've heard of these other people you've rattled off.
Yeah.
But that's what I think the difference is. It's not necessarily that you'll never have as many people that care, but it's so niche where the Von Erichs were worldwide, just celebrities, not wrestling celebrities.
Yeah.
Because there was less to do, there was less shows.
That's true.
No social media. People knew wrestling that weren't even wrestling fans. They were just like, oh, sport. Like, this is a sport. This is a thing.
Right.
So I just think it's different. But, you know.
It was the beginning of the nicheification of America.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think. Because if you think about it, like, real sports would air on the networks, right? But wrestling never aired on networks.
No, not until WCCW ended up on ESPN.
But even then, that's still a cable network.
Oh, I see. Right? You mean like the big
like
three.
The big three.
I got you.
And when they would try it, it wouldn't work. Like, yeah. Remember when they used to, you know, there was a period in the 80s where when SNL would have its off week, they would...
Saturday Night's Main Event.
They would do a wrestling thing, and nobody watched it, and it went away. Mm-hmm. And so it's
I don't think that's entirely true. I think they watched it... Because it was the height of Hulkamania.
Yeah.
So, like, those first few ones, yes, I think they were... But God,
that
then,
has to be one
then
of the...
Then they trail off.
Hulk Hogan has to be the most successful non... Like...
The crossover? A crossover star?
Kind... Like we were saying...
It's gotta be Rock.
Well, I know, but that... he's movie star and all that, definitely. But Hulk Hogan had America by the balls.
Oh, yeah.
As just like, you know what I mean? Like, I know The Rock's a famous movie star now, and Batista, there's people that have crossed over, but don't you feel like Hulk Hogan was a celebrity, not a popular wrestler, but like,
he was
Hulk Hogan was a...
He was a cultural touchstone.
But I feel like the Rock was that, and then movies turbocharged him, but he was... He made a lot of unsuccessful movies before he became a movie star.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so it took him a long time. I mean, it took him 10 or 12 years
for sure.
before he really solidified the fact that people would go to a movie for him.
But Hulk Hogan became famous without movies. His movies were bad.
But I think The Rock was famous before movies. Like,
oh.
Like, you know, like as someone who didn't care about wrestling, like... When wrestling had that big run in the mid to late 90s, like I knew who The Rock was. I knew who Stone Cold Steve Austin was.
Yeah.
I knew who The Undertaker was.
Yeah.
After that, well, who's the
Mick Foley?
There we go.
Yeah.
I knew him.
Three out of the four names you just named rattled off wrestled for Fritz Von Erich.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I knew those people. I mean, Hulk Hogan was massive, and
he had the toys and the shirts and the grills and the, you know, I just feel like Hulk Hogan like was in this upper stratosphere of celebrity that wasn't attached to wrestling. Like it was, but like Hulk Hogan became a brand where Stone Cold was like popular wrestler, The Rock was famous wrestler and then famous movie star, but Hulk Hogan for whatever reason just to me
it
seems
was,
like he just the Hulkamania was
Hulkamania like was a thing.
It was like Batman 89.
It exactly
was like Batmania.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So
right? It was like not just a famous comic book hero, Batman is a celebrity.
Yes, I don't disagree with that at all. Yeah. So David dies. What they don't
but
really
like
tell
The Rock
you.
Made a lot of bad movies before he finally figured it out.
Yeah. And then I feel like Faster, not the Fast and Furious. There's a movie called Faster where the Rundown and Faster are the two that like this is he
the Rundown was the first one where I go, hey, that was fun.
The Rundown was really good, but it wasn't a hit.
It was not
a hit. Yeah, like, but I remember seeing it like a year or two later on cable and was like, I was like, well, that was really good.
I rented that.
A lot of fun.
I don't think
Hell Dorado was the original name of that movie.
Oh.
And they should have stuck with that.
They should have.
What they don't tell you in this movie.
Be Cool was really the first time that I was like, that guy.
Oh,
but he was doing something very different there,
very
too.
Different.
Yeah.
But it showed that it's like, okay, The Rock can do these different movies.
Yeah.
And then he went on a tear where it was not good.
Yeah.
And I thought he was going to go the way of Hulk Hogan, where it's like, well, you tried.
Yeah.
Get your ass back to the ring.
Yeah.
That's the way that works. What they don't say in this movie is the time frame between when David dies and so Carrie gets the shot. They pass over Kevin, and I feel like they don't allude to it, but Kevin didn't really want it. Like, Kevin wanted to be with his brothers and to be in the ring, but, like, that idea of being the traveling champion was like, no, thank you. And it's only in real time, it's 3 months. It's 3 months between when they put David in the ground to when Kerry wrestles that match against Ric Flair. And you can find all of these matches are on... I don't think they're on the network. I don't think they're on Peacock. If you go to YouTube and you look up the Parade of WCCW, the Parade of Champions... This match is there, and all of these shows, these old world class shows, are on YouTube full free. So Carrie wrestles this match. And
but in the film, the father flips a coin. He's like, Kevin, I know you've been working so hard, but Carrie's more over.
And Carrie basically. And he's not wrong.
But he's like, we're going to flip a coin to decide.
It was Carrie the whole time.
Part of me wondered if he had a fake coin. Like, I really thought he was pulling one over on them.
I thought it was going to be like, okay, 2 out of 3.
Yeah, right.
Because he's basically, yeah, I think the dad probably would have done that if Carrie didn't
I think Kevin had the brain. I think Kevin was very smart about the wrestling business, yeah. And he knew that like the only way this is going to work, yeah. It's got to be Carrie, because like Carrie was a movie star, like he had the looks, and also it's funny to think of like you look at Carrie Von Erich in 2023, you're like kind of a goofy looking dude, I'm like, oh, what's wrong with your face? But
I guess we haven't even talked about the bear guy, the actor. Bear
guy. Well, that's a shot put guy.
That's Carrie.
Yeah, I know. We really haven't mentioned the actor though. We should tell people that.
It's the guy from Shameless Flip and
the Bear.
From Shameless, like Jeremy something Allen, Jeremy Allen White.
Yeah,
and I think he does a great job. The problem is Carrie was about 6'3", 225 pounds, and Jeremy Allen White is not.
He got in good shape though.
He did. I mean, but my point is that Zac Efron got in Carrie Von Erich shape.
Yeah,
and Jeremy Allen White got in Kevin Von Erich shape.
But that's just how the actor, unless they want to get a bunch of actual wrestlers that maybe can't do the acting part as well.
Sure.
It's just no one's going
to
do that. Do you know
who trained all these actors to be wrestlers?
Chavo Guerrero.
Yeah.
Junior,
not the old man.
But Zac Efron got in incredible shape. Like, it's ridiculous. Abs are popping out.
Well,
Each one has abs.
I think about his body in Baywatch.
Yeah.
Where it's kind of like, oh, this is just like a slim, like this is like a bulked up version, because he's ripped to shreds in Baywatch.
He's ripped in Baywatch, but I mean, he put on, there's a certain way wrestlers look with the wide chest.
It's called steroids.
I mean, but wrestlers have that wide chest. There's a certain
muscles look. Fitness model ripped in Baywatch.
Exactly. Yes. And this one, he's wrestler.
He's like bodybuilder
yes,
ripped.
Yes, that's exactly here. Right.
Yeah. And it's crazy how big he got for this movie.
It's dumb.
It's insane because he didn't need to. He could have been Baywatch shape, but from the first movie, and it's like we joked about with Patrick Wilson taking his shirt off. You're going to use shots of me with my shirt off. And that first, when he wakes up, he's sleeping, but his arms are like his muscles are up and his veins.
He's literally using his bicep as a pillow.
Yeah, it's like he got pumped up.
There's a lot of tidy whiteys in this movie.
It was the 70s and 80s.
But we didn't have to see them all.
I'm sure if a girl walked around in their underwear, you'd be like, oh, this is fun.
Yeah. Come on, equal opportunity.
Yeah. So Carrie wins the title. It's this massive thing. What they don't tell you is that Carrie dropped the title 18 days later back to Ric Flair in Japan. Like, that's the problem with Carrie is he was not reliable. He did, it's the 80s, so drugs are running rampant, and Carrie partook. And so Carrie...
So was that his punishment for doing drugs? They took the... Because, I mean, it's not like it's real competition where he lost a match. They would have written it that way.
The NWA... would say, as the NWA champion, you would get assignments, basically like, hey, you need to be in St. Louis on this day, you need to be on in Chicago on this day. Carrie would miss dates, and that was unacceptable. You had to you're the champion, you have to make your dates, these other territories are counting on you to be there, and Carrie didn't.
So they gave it back to who was reliable. Yeah.
Right.
That was Ric Flair's life. Ric Flair's daughter is also a current WWE superstar, Charlotte Flair.
We have interviews with her on ReviewSTL.com.
That's right. She's actually out right now because she completely blew her knee out. Her ACL, MCL, and patella were gone. Mm. So she is done for a year.
Patella is delicious.
Patella.
That's different.
That is different.
Yeah.
She plays a great heel, though, doesn't
she's
she?
She's fantastic. I mean, her dad, it's in the DNA.
She's playing she is... the female version of Ric Flair, basically.
Yes.
And
I'm better than you, and I know it.
She plays a great... Comes out with the cape and the music.
Oh, yeah.
And
same music. Yeah. So while all of this is going on, Carrie rides motorcycles. He has an accident.
This is the dramatization, because he has the accident, I think, 2 years later.
Yeah.
But this one, it's so
The time frame
is so sad.
Wider.
He wins the title in the movie, and then he's like, I just can't come down. I'm so excited, whatever. I'm going to go for a ride to burn some energy. And you see him drinking
at that
in the movie.
When he has the accident, he's already lost the title. And he's already
In real life.
In real life.
But yeah. In the movie, he goes out to ride his motorcycle after putting his beard down.
It seems like it's like that night.
It's the night he got the title. Right. And then he gets into an accident. It's really interesting how they film it. You know, it's like first person POV of him on the road, and you see another car ahead.
They don't show you anything.
Yeah. No, and then
it's also black. Budget-friendly way to film
it. But I liked it. Like,
I think he wins the title in 84. The accident is in 86. Yeah. In real time. Yeah.
He hit a parked police car.
Yeah.
So in the movie, it fades to black, and then he wakes up, and he's getting up, and you're just like, what's going on? Oh, he has some road rash on his back, and you're like, okay, well, I guess he survived, because not knowing the story, I'm like, there goes another one. But he survives with the road rash, and he gets up, and he's on crutches, and I'm like, dang, he can't wrestle because he just got injured, and he's hobbling around, and then the camera pulls back when he's at the fridge, and there's no foot there.
He had damaged his ankle so bad that it's funny. I was getting two stories confused because there's another wrestler named Brian Pillman who had a similar thing. He destroyed his ankle, and he was – I always thought it was Kerry, but it's Brian Pillman, who was all hopped up on pain meds. He got up to and put all of his weight on the ankle and destroyed it again, and they had to cut his ankle. Like, they couldn't fix it. And I, for whatever reason, I thought that was Kerry, but this is not. Like, Kerry's ankle was just so damaged that they couldn't save it.
Yeah.
What they don't tell you in this, Fritz told the doctors, you do not tell anyone that Kerry doesn't have a foot. So when we see Kerry putting that fake foot on, he wrestled like that and told nobody knew.
He was in the WWF wrestling against the biggest wrestlers from that time that you know with no foot.
With no foot. And if you go back and watch
normal doing it, it's insane.
Watch him wrestle post-accident, you would have no idea. That's how good he was.
I could not believe that. I mean, so you see this struggle, and again, I think because it's like the dad kept pushing him, and they don't quit, they don't give up, and they felt such guilt and just obligation to do this.
Right.
But I could not believe when I went and watched the matches where in the WWF, when he goes there, he becomes the Texas Tornado. And you watch these matches against...
Oh, well, that's the other thing we were talking
Mr.
about.
Mr. Perfect.
He beats Mr. Perfect like his first night for the which is the Intercontinental Championship.
But he has no foot, and he looks like he's, doing the wrestling moves that every wrestler does. It's what an insane story.
He is probably one of... If he had lived, if he had gotten himself together, he would have been the person we're talking about like Hulk. Maybe not to the level of Hulk Hogan, but he's in that conversation. He was that good. What we were talking about earlier is when Vince would bring in people from other organizations, he would take their gimmick and be like, no, like that's not who you're this. Right. So Dusty Rhodes, who is a pretty good example, was just kind of like this Southern everyman. He's the common man. Right. That was his gimmick. When he comes to the WWF, he's like, you're wearing polka dots now. And you're doing it just like, what are you talking about?
I remember that.
So, you know, the modern day warrior, Kerry Von Erich, is this massive star. And he signs with Vince, and he's like, nope, we're not going to call you Kerry Von Erich. We're not going to call you the thing that everybody knows you by. We're just going to call you the Texas Tornado. That was his name.
Which they kind of still do today with, you know, Daniel Bryanson or whatever.
Well, that's Bryan true. Because what they want to do is they want to own
the IP.
So,
but people know that. What's CM Punk's name?
CM Punk? He's always been CM Punk.
Okay, bad, but...
Bryan Danielson
is Daniel Bryan. What's the other one that goes to AEW and is
Adam Copeland?
Yeah.
We knew him as Edge, but he can't call himself Edge, so he's Adam Copeland.
And the other guy that looks like Ed Sheeran, what's his name?
The other guy that looks like Ed Sheeran.
Is John Daniel Moxley? Bryan? Moxley, yes.
Oh, so he was Dean Ambrose in the WWF, but his real name is, I don't know if it's his real name.
But that's his AEW name.
It's John Moxley.
But people know, but now I guess there's more social media and stuff, where back then... I mean, do you think it was a secret, or did people...
I think everybody knew he was Kerry Von Erich.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's still, just because you changed the name, I mean, I know that's the famous gimmick, but people still know.
Yeah.
He took it away, but
Vince wants to own everything. Yeah. So that's why he wouldn't do, like, he wouldn't, when he bought WCW, he wouldn't use any of their pay-per-view titles.
Yeah.
Because he's like, I didn't create it, I don't want it. I'm going to own it, but I'm not using it.
Yeah.
So Kerry breaks, you know, they destroy his foot. Now... Mike, to me, this is the most heartbreaking one.
The father's running out of people for the roster.
Right.
Bring up, he was like the cameraman in their operation, and not
he was good. Yeah. Right? But he wasn't Carrie or Kevin or David.
And clearly his heart wasn't in it as the movie presents.
So Mike's in the ring and they, you know, he's doing his thing. And they, what they don't tell you in this one is that they're in Israel is when this injury happens. So they're in Israel wrestling a match and Mike dislocates his arm. Now we've seen Mike throughout the movie. I love this scene where he's got a gig and his mom says, no, you're not going. And the brothers are like, we'll go with him. And she's like, absolutely not. Well, the brothers sneak him out.
Yeah.
I do love how they portray the brothers in this.
I think it's fantastic. Hug and embrace and they clearly love each other. Yeah.
Like I love the fact that they were supporting his interest in something that wasn't wrestling.
Yes. They were just supporting their brother.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's wrestling this match and he goes for a drop kick and he lands on his shoulder and he dislocates. It's not even that big of a deal, right? He just dislocates his shoulder. Well, what happens is he gets on a plane with, which you're not supposed to do, with an injury like that. And he gets a blood clot and I think he has to have he gets back to Texas.
I think it was just from what I understand. It just was routine shoulder surgery in Texas and he gets a staph infection.
I thought they were trying to get maybe.
He's going in to just fix the shoulder. It's in Texas. It's not even out of the country. And he gets an infection. His temperature goes from
107.
I think they said 105 in real life. In the movie, I think they say 107. But
what a weird thing to change.
I know.
Yeah, right?
But, I mean,
right?
All the things.
Even at 105, all adults are like, Jesus.
In the documentary, they kept saying 105. But yeah, I think the movie says 107. But anyway, they're like, he's in a coma. And that's the point, again, where as an audience member not knowing the story, we're all just like, oh my God. God,
what are the chances?
Like, if it wasn't a true story, you'd be like, oh, bull.
Badger than a fiction. Yeah.
So they think he's going to die. Kevin tells a gut-wrenching story about how they all circled Mike's bed and they started praying and then Mike came out of it.
And he just pops out of it and the doctor's like, we don't know how or why. He's better.
Well, I don't know if he's better. He's alive.
Careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
As the story goes, he was never the same.
No, he boiled his brain.
Yeah. Like that. It's just, his brain. And Kevin tells the stories about he would attack parked cars with no one in them.
Yeah.
He would just like start attacking them and banging on them. Like he just wasn't there. He would have these moments of rage that something in his brain he just couldn't control it anymore.
And I will tell you can find the
press conference.
Dude, like it is
like,
hard to
I'll
watch.
Be back. He can hardly talk, and he's like, "Yeah, I'll be
His
back."
His eyes all fucked up, like it's all bloodshot. And
this is in the movie. Like, I mean, they portray it pretty well, where you can see the guy where he's like holding his hand. He can hardly even have a movement of his hand. His other hand's in a cast, and he's like, "Yeah, I'll be back."
Did you say toxic shock?
That's what he goes into. Well, he got a staph infection,
and then the toxic,
but the temperature or something, and then he got toxic shock syndrome.
I gotta tell you, before cell phones, right?
Yeah.
And I lived in a house with two women. There wasn't much to read when you're dropping a deuce.
Except for the back of a tampon thing.
I learned about toxic shock.
Yeah, that's, I think, the thing it's most commonly associated with. And nowadays, people know more.
But man, watching the way they portray this in the movie is almost identical.
Yeah,
like,
it is.
Mike is gone. Like, the Mike that we see before is not the Mike we get after he comes out of that coma.
And Jim Henson died of toxic
shock. Oh, dang.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I just thought it was pneumonia. I thought it was just pneumonia. I never realized it caused that it went.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But the fact that Fritz and no one else had the balls to step in on his behalf because Fritz was pushing these kids so hard.
Yeah.
There is no one in their right mind that would think that Mike should have continued wrestling after that.
No, he should never have been.
Yep. Like,
he should never have gotten back.
He shouldn't have been in the ring in the first place. But to say that he's going to be back and wrestle is just crazy. And that
and he
pressure.
Can't. And he couldn't. Yeah.
He knew that. Like,
I think in real life, Mike did get busted with drugs. So he had some drug charges pending. And
that's Carrie.
No, it's also Mike.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I know that was Carrie's story that they don't get into in the movie.
It is also Carrie. That Mike also had some drug charges. And he felt that he was going to dishonor the family name. And he took a bunch of pills and he wrote a note and he took some beers and he literally wrapped himself up in a sleeping bag.
The way that Kevin tells the story in those interviews, he says like it was before people knew stuff and he was just fighting through the pain and stuff and took a bunch of meds with beer. And like, that's the way that Kevin presented it.
Well, I'm pretty sure he left a note.
Yeah. I think they all left notes.
That's true.
Yeah. They're polite. Like that.
Right.
Well, that dad taught him. You better be.
So he got arrested for drug possession and then he ODs in his car, and that's they find. And this is, I mean, this is kind of the beginning of the end. Like, that's the Von Erich curse. It's hard to not believe it.
Yeah,
you know, at this point.
Once David dies, it's like the whole thing is just such a mess.
It's on
with them swapping people for the title shot, and then, you know, and just Carrie, one thing after
at this point,
another.
I think Carrie's gone. I think Carrie is in the WWF when Mike dies. I think because Mike dies in, I wrote it down. Mike died in 87, and then Chris died in 91. Okay. So Carrie, I think, is up there because Carrie dies in 93.
Okay,
spoilers. And it, this is, you know, I think now we're focused in the movie, at least we're focusing on Kevin, like his, he's got this new family. He's got these twin boys. He's got Lily James is, you know, and he has just fallen apart. They do this, which I think is interesting, is when they're doing the boy's birth certificate, he does not put Von Erich on the gift certificate, on the birth certificate.
Children are
gifts. Sometimes, he puts Atkinson, which is their legal name. Like, that's their actual
name.
Like, it shows how much weight he was putting in this. Like, he even says in these later interviews, he's like, I know it's silly. I shouldn't believe in this stuff. Like, but
it's hard to not.
Man, it would be hard. Even if you didn't believe in anything, but this stuff kept happening, it would be hard not to be like, I'm cursed, you know?
Or the family's cursed.
Yeah, and it's sad because as you see, like, his marriage is kind of falling apart because he is not coming home and he's trying to stay away from these boys and he's like, I don't want them to get it, which does sound ridiculous. And Lily James is like, come on.
Right. You know?
But she's like, this doesn't work. You need to come home because this doesn't work for
me. I can't do this
by
myself.
She's working. She has aspirations. She wants to be a vet. And they've got these two kids, so she has to go to work. And meanwhile, he's just like, but I get it. Like, dude, if there's anyone you can sympathize with.
Yeah.
I mean, he does have to step up and be there for his family, but the dude has been through.
He's lost three brothers already.
So it's just a terrible situation over, you know.
Very much so. Very much so. Now Kevin is still wrestling. He has this match with Flair. The timeline for this one is messed up. This is not right.
Did you notice too how as, you know, when the brothers, when things are getting worse.
Don't look
and worse
at that clock.
Yeah, when things are getting worse and worse and worse, and you see the arena, and it's like
it's getting less and less.
You see less people in the audience.
I thought that was a really slick move.
How you can tell? I mean, just a show without telling you, you see the turnout for these shows. People don't care anymore. The thing is ending.
Like I said, David Manning and Bill Mercer are these two characters that they kind of combine into one. The guy who's like the ring announcer, that's Bill Mercer and David Manning are like two characters put together.
And that guy is going to be in St. Louis at the Toyman Show, which I work at every month or whatever. David Innes, I think is his name.
Scott
Innes. And he does some voices of Scooby-Doo and Shaggy
and stuff.
But he's the actor that played him.
Yeah. So
come meet him, Toyman.
Maybe January. So that Flair match that they do here, where it looks like Kevin screws it up and he attacks Flair.
Oh yeah,
That actually happens in 1985. So Mike and Carrie are both still alive when that happens. In the movie, they're both dead. Mm. So like the timeline is a little messed up, but it
sure.
Also, it is kind of funny how everybody freaks out that it looks like Kevin like hurt Flair, and it's like, you knew what was going to happen.
That's one of my complaints about this movie is that when they're doing stuff in the ring, it's really hard to know what is wrestling
and what is not,
and when it suddenly becomes real.
Sure.
And like I wish there was a little bit more delineation to when something was happening that wasn't planned.
Well, even when they go back to the locker room, and Flair's like, hey, man, you were awesome out there.
Right.
Like, we got some heat. Like,
but,
we got something going.
But in the movie, in the narrative, because you're right, this match is not in the timeline how it happened.
Right.
But he was not supposed to do that. Like, he held on to him and got disqualified. This was supposed to be his title shot.
Oh, is that right?
Like he was not supposed to DQ him, and that's why the dad's like, what the hell was going on out there? So he screwed the whole thing up in the movie.
In
the movie, this is the end of this whole thing because, you know, after that, like, because
Carrie's sitting there and Carrie is about to go, like, because in the movie, it's Fritz and Carrie are both sitting there.
Yeah,
and we've seen,
what the hell are you doing?
And we've seen Carrie try to wrestle on this busted foot and he can't do it.
And then and Kevin screws this thing up, and so there's just nothing left. And so now he goes to WWE. He takes the WWF.
Yeah, he takes the offer, and it's hard to not take that offer in 90, 91. Yeah.
So like fast forward. So no one's at these shows anymore.
No.
The dad gives the business to Kevin.
Which okay, so this isn't true.
Okay.
Fritz is the one who sells to Jerry Jarrett.
Oh, okay.
Kevin did not want to sell the promotion at
all.
So
they flipped the roles.
They did.
To make it more like this is how he gets out. That's
correct.
The happy ending for Kevin is getting out.
But yeah, Fritz is the one. And the fact that Jerry Jarrett, who we know his son Jeff is Jeff Jarrett, who is still in. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Still working today. I just watched him like yesterday. Yeah. So Fritz, I mean, he kind of suckered Jerry Jarrett. I think Jerry Jarrett thought he was buying a hot territory and he was.
Because it was, but apparently he didn't get the updates.
Correct. Yeah.
But in the movie, though, narrative-wise,
he sells to Jerry Jarrett.
He gives to Kevin. Kevin talks with Fritz, and he says, hey, well, Lily James, Pam, in the movie is like, this place is too small. We've got these two boys. I don't know if at this point one's on the way. If they show, that might be
later. No, that's the very end.
They're like, we can't live here anymore. We got to do something. And so he goes to his dad, and he's like, I got an offer from Jarrett.
He's like, don't you dare.
And then the dad's like, if you sell, you will never walk through those doors again, basically disowning him.
Right. They're watching Kerry win the IC title.
And yeah, he's at Survivor Series or something watching him wrestle. So Kerry comes home. He clearly is not in a good way.
He is a mess. Yeah. He is a mess.
Bring some woman home they've never heard of or seen.
And right.
He even says, like, that's no one, like, later on. Like, just bring someone home.
Kerry calls Kevin, at night, and he's like, where's Tanya? And he's like, who?
Yeah. When he comes home for Christmas, he brings the dad a .44 Magnum or something.
Woods, which was once owned by Anton Chekhov.
Oh.
That is, when I
said, well done.
Yes. Yeah. I was like, do you know some history in this? Like,
that was great. Yeah, I've never heard a word that way. That was slick. But he brings him a gun and gets all mad because the dad won't fire it off. And he's like, it's Christmas. We're about to eat dinner. Like, dude, chill out.
Right.
And he's like, okay, sorry.
Sorry.
So
and Kerry is in a bad way.
And like, Kevin has this talk with him. He's like, are you okay?
Yeah. And he's like, yeah, I'm fine.
Getting pretty good at knowing what it looks like when one of my brothers is about to die.
Seriously,
well, he says, though. I mean, they're talking on the phone, and Kevin has said, he's like, what he kept saying is like about how brave Chris was for doing what he did and how strong and how much balls it took to do that. And Kevin's like, hey, man, what are you talking about?
Right.
Like, just tell me where you are. I'll come get you. And I think Kevin,
you're talking about in the movie would be Mike, right? Chris isn't in the movie.
Sorry. Well, no, because Mike takes the drugs. But the conversation, the real life conversation between Kevin and Kerry, real life is that Kerry was like, you know, basically saying how strong Chris was for shooting himself.
Got it. I got it.
And Kerry, I think,
I like when he calls and he goes, oh, I'm glad you're still up. It was just kind of this, like, dark humor, but, like, you know, Zac Efron's getting out of bed trying to be quiet, not to wake the wife
up.
Oh, good, I'm glad you're up.
I'm glad you're up.
I'm up. But it's horrible. Yeah, he's just, like, he's talking like he's going
to
end it all.
Yeah, I think he says, I'm going to go to the ranch. So Kevin calls the ranch and talks to Fritz. He's like, hey, Kerry's coming up there. You need to, like, keep him there because I'm coming. And Fritz
says, you boys need to work it out.
But in real life, Fritz is like, he's like laying concrete on the ranch and he doesn't pay any attention to it. So
yeah, in real life, he says, I got to call you back. He doesn't, whatever. But yeah, in the movie, narrative wise, he says, you boys have to work it out again. This thing that he commonly does throughout the film where he's just got this thing where he's like, I'm not going to step in and do anything.
They have that moment with Kevin and Moira Tierney, where he's like, hey, can you tell Dad to back off Mike? And she's like, that's between you.
Like, yeah, even man, she I think after losing her
all of
oldest
them?
Son.
Yeah.
No, I think from the beginning. I think because cold moment is in the very beginning when none of the others had died yet. She just like she's cold from the beginning, and I think losing Jack Jr. really screwed her up.
Probably.
And so that's, you know, what they're showing. Like, this woman and that scene when she has to put on the same black dress and she's like, I can't, people will notice, is heartbreaking. That's a really good scene.
It's a very good scene.
And Lily James is comforting her and saying, like, it's okay, you need, you know, no one's gonna care about that, whatever. But heartbreaking. I mean, this woman has, you know, lost so many kids that she hasn't had time to buy a new black dress. But anyway, so he goes to the ranch.
He
goes to the ranch, sees a car parked, door
he
open.
He sees Kerry's car.
Runs into the house, doors open in the house.
And he hears a gunshot. And I was, in this moment, I was just like, I know what's going to happen. I know how all of these brothers died.
Yeah, I think we all do at this point, right?
Like, they change this a little bit. Kevin does not find Kerry. It's Fritz that finds Kerry. Yeah.
Kevin found Chris.
Yes.
Like we were saying earlier.
Correct. Correct. And there's a moment where Kevin snaps and he goes after Fritz and he's like, you did this. This is on you. And Fritz immediately blames Kevin. Like, you should have helped him. You should have done whatever. Oh,
God, this dad is so horrible. I mean, he was such a horrible person.
He's the worst. It's a character choice where he gets worse. Like, I don't think he's that bad.
I think he's
under the surface.
He's bad, but he gets more and more selfish as his chances diminish, right? Like,
that's what it's
about.
Once
he realizes the belt's never going to come home or whatever, like, he gets desperate.
Yeah, and it came home for 18 days.
Yeah, but he's horrible from the beginning. The fact that he dragged all his sons and forced them, and Mike and Chris, who was 5'5", like, the fact that this guy would, to keep this dynasty going, to bring champions home, would do this to his kids. I mean, he's awful.
He was awful. Not as awful as Grizzly Smith, if you out there, YouTube.
Don't know maybe
Google. It's Jake the Snake's dad.
Oh.
Google that guy. Mm. It's bad. That's real bad. This is a very weird scene.
I thought he was going to kill the dad and, like, not knowing the story.
I was like, oh, does he kill the dad?
He goes to jail for murder.
Oh, man, that would have been one hell of an ending.
But
he
almost strangles him to death and then lets off, which I think we were all like, relieved that he got that outlet, because this guy's awful.
Yeah, right.
But he did kill him.
There is this weird scene where Carrie picks up Kevin's body.
Kevin picks up Carrie. Yeah.
What did I say? Did I say the opposite?
Yeah. That would be a weird
one. Another weird way to end the movie. And he lays him down on the table and he has this moment, you know, he's holding his hand, and we flash to Carrie walking, you know, on the grass. He's got both of his
feet. He jumps, his foot's back. Yeah.
And he sees, I think this is a brilliant choice.
He crosses over, puts
worst
the coin.
Worst scene in the movie.
I think it was great. I think the way they did it.
Bad scene. And I will do one better. It's an irresponsible scene.
What do you mean?
Because anyone watching this movie who might be struggling with suicide that sees this scene is going to. Yeah,
I see what you're saying.
It is a bad and irresponsible scene in this movie.
I see that argument. Like, absolutely, I do.
Yeah, it is. I get that they're wanting to try and give some sort of happy ending for these brothers.
Right.
But, like, I just, the way it was displayed, I just thought.
I could absolutely understand that. Well, you're not wrong.
I can't say it from that angle. Right? Because it's a valid point.
Carrie's not on drugs. He's healthy.
Yeah.
He gets his foot back. He sees David with the world championship around his waist.
Yeah.
He sees Mike rocking a guitar.
Yeah.
So, like, everybody
and
is perfect.
Not brain damaged.
Yeah, not brain damaged.
Right.
Yeah. I
do feel that's irresponsible in a way. I totally get that. But what they're trying to do is, this family went through so much hell. It's like, good Lord. But at least, you know, to think somewhere there. I mean, people say this stuff all the time. I'll see you again. You're in, you know, they're just
for
doing
sure.
That
but
thing.
To have it visually spelled out for you like that, especially when it's essentially instantaneous.
Sure.
That it's like, oh, if you shoot yourself, you will instantly get your foot back, reunite with your loved ones. Well,
your brothers will be happy.
Who wouldn't take that?
That's fair.
I get that. No, I don't disagree at all.
I liked the, you know, he puts the coin down. It's like passing over on the, like,
the
river
sticks. Paying the ferryman.
I liked the metaphor of it and everything, but I
never thought of it that way, but you're absolutely right. I think you're totally right.
Now does it flash forward to him and the boys? Zach,
he sells. We see him sitting down with Jerry Jarrett and selling the promotion, and then it's him with Lily James, and the boys are playing. And I don't like it when people say this broke me, XYZ broke me. This is like the most gut-wrenching thing.
Why don't you like that when people say that?
I just think it's overused.
Yeah.
I think people use it all the time.
Well, yeah, it's just shorthand for it's seen wrecked me.
But this... Just, so Kevin...
Yeah, this
is,
got me to tear up.
He's sitting there watching his boys play football, and he starts crying, and the boys come over, and they're like, what's the matter? He's like, I used to be a brother, and now I'm not.
But it's a little more subtle than that. I'll say, because I just want to do justice to it. He's crying. He's like, I'm sorry, boys. You shouldn't see me crying. A man shouldn't cry.
Yeah.
And the two boys go, that's okay. You can cry. We cry all the time. You know, like, it's so refreshing. This is an important message send to people, especially in, like, a macho world. You know what I mean? Like, the world of wrestling. I'm not trying to be derogatory. I'm just saying,
no, there's muscles and macho
and be a man and
all
that.
There's a toxic masculinity.
Right?
Absolutely there is. Yeah. Like, this is when people talk about it, like, when they're like, masculinity's fine. It's like, okay, but there's a... There's a line. Yeah. There's a qualifying adjective attached to the word masculinity.
Right. So, right. Like, yeah. It's just so well written in the way the kids say, "It's fine, Dad. You can cry. We cry all the time." And he go, and they go, "Do you know why you're crying?" And he's like, "Well, I guess I used to be
a brother, and now I'm not.
And now I'm not a brother anymore." And they go, "We'll be your brothers."
Off.
And then he's crying, and he's, "Thank you, boys." And then they go and have a catch.
And that's how it ends. And that's how
it's a beautiful moment. And Kevin tells the story in an interview, and he used to say that he's like, you know, that I wasn't a brother anymore. And I just think the way that they wove that into the writing and ended it on that beautiful moment that, it was really well done.
I'd be like, well, brothers don't pay each other allowance.
so sorry, boys.
Tom's just thinking of all the ways like that wouldn't work out.
I'm trying to think if there's anything that they see.
The post credit scene where Ric Flair comes out.
Right. Okay, so Gino Hernandez, we talked about earlier. He's the first guy that Mike and Kevin wrestle in the beginning of the movie. He dies in 86. So like, and then Bruiser Brody dies in 88. So like, world class is dealing with all of these deaths at the same time.
But Kevin and Pam were married for 40-something years.
So that's rare in wrestling.
I think
that's rare in life.
That's true.
But when you see the fact that Kevin does have the happy ending and that he gets to grow up with his kids, and then they show you in real life that he got a ranch, I guess. I guess it's a different
ranch.
So what
happens is, honestly,
he built the life he wanted.
He did. Right? But they move. They leave Texas.
Yeah.
In real life, they were worried, you know, Kevin was like, "I got to get out of here."
Yeah, for sure.
He picked up his family and they moved to Hawaii.
Yeah.
Like, that's for
Hawaii.
Real. Yeah.
Okay. So, but it's like, and he did the thing that in the beginning he joked about. They wrote it into the story. He's like, "Hey, we can build a huge home and have all the family come live there." And they show a picture of like he and his kids and their kids, his grandkids are all living on this ranch. And just, and you watch interviews with him, watch the Vice thing. And he's just like in the beautiful nature. And
I think
ducks walking around.
I think they just moved back to Texas.
Oh, okay.
Just recently, I think. Yeah, because they're, well, okay, so just a few of the names that went through the WCCW at one point. Ric Flair, the Great Muta, for hardcore wrestling fans. Michael P.S. Hayes, Steve Austin, Mick Foley, Rick Rude, The Ultimate Warrior, The Undertaker. Like, a lot of those Texas-based guys all went through WCCW, the World Class Championship Wrestling. Fun fact. You know, when Bill Mercer and Kevin are talking in the office and there's those two guys that are wrestling in the ring, that's Ross and Marshall Von Erich.
Oh,
like those are Kevin's sons.
Oh,
those are the boys. The boys now wrestle. They were just on TV for AEW. Kevin was on TV. Like they were out there together.
Oh, because AEW is like a commercial, right?
Kind of.
They do those things.
The boys are legit wrestlers.
Oh, like, I know. But you mean to promote this movie? They did a
no. They wrestled. They brought them in to work some matches and see where
at. I know they really wrestle. I'm saying they were just on to promote this movie.
Yes, absolutely.
Because I've heard AEW is getting in hot water because it's turned into a commercial. They do these sometimes silly bits.
Yeah. They had a Texas Chainsaw Massacre match. Like, that's the kind of...
It's horrible. I know WWF has done some promotional things.
They had the Mountain Dew Pitch Black match.
Yeah, like, but I'm just saying, like, I know, but these AEW ones I've seen clips from, like, good Lord.
But they... So those are Kevin's sons.
Yeah.
Carrie had two daughters. Lacey, who had, like, a cup of coffee. She was in the business for very short. And another daughter who has stayed away from wrestling altogether until just recently.
Oh.
She started doing some interviews about the family and stuff like that. The other things I did want to talk about just real quick, just things you can watch. Like, if you're interested in this family, we did talk about it's Dark Side of the Ring season 2. The Von Erichs is what that one is. WWE did a documentary on the promotion, which is pretty much all this is. It's called the, Triumph and Tragedy of WCCW. There's also, you can, like I said, you can go online. All of these matches that they reference and they show you are real. So you can see Ric Flair versus Kerry Von Erich. If you look up,
you can see him versus Kevin.
Yeah. But the three that I will reference is Kerry versus Jerry Lawler from Super Clash 3. Kevin versus Ric Flair from April of 83. And then there's a bunch of other, the Parade of Champions is the big one. It's 1984 is when that happens. So that's all on YouTube. Like, I don't know how that happened because I thought Vince bought the library, but I guess not. So all of that stuff is out there. The one match I will say is the Pride of Champions. And then the Super Clash 3 is kind of the one of the better Kerry Von Erich. He tears his bicep like 5 minutes into the match and then has to, it is a blood and guts match because Kerry is just leaking blood all over the place. But it gives you an idea. He has no foot. And it gives you an idea of how good he was.
Man, I mean, we didn't even talk about that scene where Efron goes over the top rope and then lands on the concrete. He gets like a suplexed on the concrete.
Just back
and
up.
He's like, that wasn't even supposed to happen. And first, it's like, you know, that's how they test you. That's how they, what, see if you can get through it. And he can barely even get in the ring before the 10 count.
Right.
And that's where he gets the
also qualifying. The fact that Fritz kind of gives him crap for that. And I was like, well, also, he barely makes it in. It's drama, baby.
You're supposed to barely make it.
But I think it was but he almost had that, like, that's foreshadowing for the thing where he gets disqualified, where it's like he almost didn't and then would lose the shot. You
know? Yes, so. Correct. I think this is probably too late for Oscar contention.
I don't think so. No.
No?
We didn't get it in time for like local awards voting, but it's out there for
Oscars. I think you gotta put him you gotta put Efron up. Yeah. I think he should be nominated for Best Actor. Yeah, I think
it's good. I think people are going to dismiss this because it's wrestling, but the Rotten Tomato scores is 90-something%. The audience score is 90-something. I mean, this is a great film. It's like with Moneyball that we talked about. You don't have to care about wrestling. There's a lot of wrestling in it, but I think it's not real.
It's not the focal point.
But it looks real. They did a good job with the wrestling. Like you said, they had people on it that obviously knew their stuff. It's interesting to watch, but it's about the family dynamic more than anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, this was a really good movie. Yeah. I enjoyed it as much as you can enjoy this story because it's an awful story.
Sure. Yeah.
So anyway, I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, BUTTS21, and also on Letterboxd at the same.
And on Binge Movies for this.
And
special.
On Binge Movies. Yeah. I mean, like, we didn't intend for it to go 4 hours. Mm-hmm. And then I looked at the clock and I was just like, oh no.
The question is, did you record it?
Yes.
Oh, whew.
Yes.
Okay.
I learned my lesson.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online at facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. And of course, don't forget our Patreon at patreon.com/Real Spoilers. So that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Mary and Andy elope.
Get ready for a spoiler. Don't say it twice, cause we already warned ya. Better watch out, it's gonna ruin the plot. Real spoilers. Real spoilers. Real spoilers.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.